Welcome to the Heart Kids podcast. Join us as we explore stories of Australians impacted by childhood heart conditions. I am one of your hosts, Samuel Stolberg. I was born with a congenital heart condition and I had my first open heart surgery at the age of 26. Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge that we are recording on the land of the Gubbi Gubbi peoples, otherwise known as Queensland's Sunshine Coast. We acknowledge the traditional owners of this land and the land that you're listening in from today. We pay our respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Today's guest is Dr. Ben Reeves, a pediatric cardiologist from Cairns. Ben looks after children with heart conditions in Cairns, the Torres Strait, Cape York, and the surrounding areas. Until recently, he was the only pediatric cardiologist north of Brisbane. A large component of Ben's work involves treating children with rheumatic heart disease, a preventable disease which disproportionately affects Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia. So welcome, Ben, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's our absolute pleasure. So I often meet people who are surprised to hear that I was actually born with a heart condition. A lot of people don't know children can have heart problems. Can you tell us a little bit about your role as a pediatric cardiologist, what you do, the types of heart problems children can have, and any other little bits of information for us?
So, yeah, thanks, Sam. A pediatric cardiologist looks after children with heart problems. So that can start even before they're born. These days with antenatal ultrasound, we can detect some heart problems and organise appropriate care even before children are delivered. Most of my work obviously starts soon after birth with babies and children up to teenagers, up to the age of 18. So much of my work is heart problems that children are born with, like yours. And there's an increasing number of children who acquire heart problems during childhood, such as the rheumatic patients that you mentioned, but also other kids who acquire problems with the heart muscle that affect its beating, rhythm problems that can come along later on. So it's a really fairly diverse group of patients.
Yeah, I'm sure it proposes some extra challenges for you, working so remotely. As I mentioned before the podcast, you know, that your home base is up in my motherland. And, you know, when I was born, it was, it was challenging for my mother to find, you know, a specialist for us. And, you know, then we moved down to Gympie and, you know, we had to travel to Brisbane for that kind of stuff. So I'm sure, yeah, it proposes lots of challenges. So what does an average day look like for you as a pediatric cardiologist?
So every day that I work in the hospital, in public hospital in Cairns, I do a clinic. I have between 6 and 10 patients that attend the clinic, and they can be from all over the place. I also am asked by my colleagues in pediatrics to consult on patients on the ward who may have a heart problem. Every now and again, I have my own patients admitted to the ward with a problem that we need them in hospital for to treat. I often am called to the newborn babies special care unit to look at newborns with potential heart problems. I also do a lot of outreach clinics up into the Cape and into the Cairns region, into the Torres Straits. I do a little bit of research and a little bit of advocacy for rheumatic heart disease as well. So I don't think any 2 days are the same, really, which is nice for me.
I'm sure it wouldn't get any easier for you when you get called in to see the newborn babies and, you know, they have all these heart complications. It always tugs on my heartstrings when I've done my hospital visits and, yeah, you see these young babies. But roughly what percentage of your work would be seeing children with congenital heart disease compared to conditions acquired during childhood?
Well, that really depends where you work. So where I am in North Queensland, we see quite a lot of rheumatic heart disease, which is obviously an acquired problem. And I would say between 30 and 40% of my workload would be rheumatic heart disease. The rest is mostly congenital disease, so problems babies are born with and they deal with through their life, and a smaller number of rhythm problems and other acquired things. Compared to someone in, say, Brisbane or Sydney or Melbourne, where 90-95% of their work would be congenital heart problems and they would see rheumatic problems very rarely.
That's fascinating. So you briefly touched on it a little bit, but can you sort of iterate a little bit more on, I guess, what is rheumatic heart disease and how do children contract it?
So rheumatic heart disease occurs due to an infection, a common infection, a streptococcal infection, like strep throat or strep skin sores, that gets into the system, gets into the body, and can cause rheumatic fever in individuals who are prone to that. So rheumatic fever happens because of the body's attempts to kill off the strep germ. It misfires and attacks the body's own tissues. Typically, it presents with joint pains and fevers, a little bit like the flu, except sometimes, you know, it's more specific to knees and ankles and shoulders rather than muscle pains in the flu. So they get this acute rheumatic fever, and as well as damaging joints and causing fever, it also damages heart valves. And that's the problem that I'm interested in. Sometimes the first episode of rheumatic fever causes severe heart damage, but more often the children get repeated infections, repeated episodes with rheumatic fever, and that causes accumulative heart damage. So it just gets worse and worse and worse. The great thing about rheumatic disease, though, is that we understand it very well, and we've got good methods, good treatments that can prevent the streptococcal infection in the first place. So we can treat sore throats and skin sores. We can detect children with rheumatic fever and prevent heart damage by putting them on regular treatment. And this is a disease that we can, if we treat it properly, we can entirely prevent all of those terrible things that can happen to children that I see, unfortunately, all too often.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely heartbreaking. So you also touched on this point a little bit, but RHD is largely eradicated in our major cities, but parts of northern Australia, including across North Queensland, the Cape and the Torres Strait, have persistently high rates of RHD. It's something that disproportionately impacts the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Why is that?
That's a good question. So rheumatic disease was common in big cities in white populations in the 50s and 60s in Australia. And since then, it's largely been eradicated, except in mostly Aboriginal communities or in cities which have a population of Indigenous people, First Nations people, immigrants, South Sea Islanders, that sort of population group. And it's because of household overcrowding, because of poorer living conditions, it's because of reduced access to health care and appropriate treatment pathways. And unfortunately, sometimes it's because of a lack of recognition amongst clinicians who are really not used to seeing this disease. So unfortunately, this is a problem that we'd normally, as clinicians, put down to third world countries, but it's very common still in Australia and still causing big issues for our First Nations communities.
So it's unfortunate, you know, that we do live in this first world country, and you know, we have such amazing access to a health system and professionals like yourself. But yeah, it's disappointing that we still have these you know, people living in that sort of a climate where they don't have that sort of access, and it's just, you know, this kind of thing is rife through that population. So I've also read that rheumatic heart disease is twice as common in females than in males. Do we understand the reasoning behind that?
Well, I don't think it's completely understood. What we believe is that, in general, girls tend to have higher problems with autoimmune problems in general. And if you remember, when I talked about rheumatic fever, it's the body's reaction, it's the immune reaction to the streptococcal germ that causes this in the first place. So in girls who have generally a tendency to more immune problems, it's probably the reason why we see more rheumatic fever and more rheumatic heart disease in them.
Yeah, that's, you're just throwing all these disappointing facts out for us, and it's just it gives me goosebumps when I hear this kind of stuff. So with most cases of congenital heart disease, about 80% of them, we don't know the cause. The less we know about a disease, the harder it is to stop. We know exactly what causes RHD, so why are children still contracting this disease?
Well, unfortunately, it goes back to poorer living conditions. Household overcrowding leads to spread of the streptococcal germ, which is obviously the precursor to all of these issues. And it goes back to our First Nations people really not having the same quality of lifestyle and healthcare that the rest of us enjoy. We mentioned before that myself and Dr. Bowe and now Dr. Roche, we are three pediatric cardiologists in Northern Australia, north of a line between Brisbane and Perth. And below that sits more than 40 pediatric cardiologists in the big cities. So that just gives you an idea of the challenge in providing specialist healthcare. That's also the region of Australia where rheumatic heart disease is the most prevalent. So we're looking at a huge burden of disease with a low number of specialist services. And it's no wonder that we're not doing as well as we should be.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to say here is if you're studying to become a pediatric cardiologist, or if you are an acting pediatric cardiologist, we need your help in these remote areas, because, you know, there's clearly not enough support out there. You know, and it's, it goes to our government as well. Like, you know, we need to throw more support for these communities. So part of your job involves flying or traveling to remote communities in the Cape and Torres Strait Islands to deliver cardiology services. What generally happens on these trips, and why are they so important?
So we generally fly to remote communities and spend several days up there in the community doing clinics at the health centre, also trying to do as much education as we can for health staff up there. But I think it's really important that people, even in remote communities in Australia, still get the same access to specialist services that we enjoy in the bigger cities. So that's what I'm really passionate about. The great benefit, as well as you're saving a lot of money for the health system, not transporting parents and children and families down for clinics, you're also experiencing their culture and their community and seeing how they live and making connections in these small places. And I think hopefully making them feel more comfortable being treated in their own community. So I think it's so important. We've missed that during the COVID lockdowns. We haven't been able to travel so much, but we're starting to get out there again. And I think the community appreciate the effort we make.
And it's such a beautiful culture. So getting out to experience, you know, the culture of the First Nations people, like it's amazing work that you're doing of being able to get up there and support these people. I'm sure that they are very appreciative. So let's get into maybe a little bit about yourself. When did you decide that you wanted to become a pediatric cardiologist, and what led you to that decision?
So I had been training in a number of different areas and decided I wanted to be a pediatrician after a while. I'd done quite a lot of general pediatric training. I'd worked in the UK in some big hospitals, and then I got the chance to go and work in Fiji as a pediatrician there for 2 years. What made a big impact on me in Fiji was within the first week of going there, I travelled out to do a clinic in another small village out there, and I brought back a child who was 12 years old and was in heart failure, and he had rheumatic heart disease. And I thought, well, this is amazing. I've never seen rheumatic heart disease before. We looked after him and we gave him some medicine. We didn't have a cardiologist at the small hospital that I worked at. We patched him up and we managed to get him home, but he actually died 3 months later with an infection on his heart valve. And it made such a big impact on me at that stage that I thought, I really need to do some more training. I need to get out there and stop this from happening. You know, it was devastating seeing him in his village, seeing the effect on his family, and going back to the fact that we know that this is a preventable illness. So from there, I embarked on specialist cardiology training. I went through the training program in Brisbane, and the first chance I got once I finished my training, I wanted to come back up to the north where I knew there was rheumatic disease and get stuck in.
That's absolutely amazing. And for somebody who, you know, are living remotely up in Cairns, and then, you know, my own heart story is, you know, my vows have given me grief in the past, you know, hearing about that young fella over in Fiji, that's, you know, brings a bloody tear to your eyes. So for yourself, what change would you like to see in the future in the field of pediatric cardiology, aside from the fact of, you know, we're needing more support up in these regional areas?
Yeah, I think even in my career, I've seen such a change in the way we treat heart conditions. Many things that previously required surgery, we can now do through catheter-based procedures with short inpatient stays and really excellent results with no scars for children. So we're going to see continued improvements in technologies and techniques to get better outcomes and better survival and less problems related to heart issues. I guess in rheumatic heart disease, what I'd really like to see is just no more patients in my waiting room with rheumatic disease. And wouldn't that be so wonderful that I could consign rheumatic heart disease in First Nations people to the history books, just like it's been in white Australia. And we can do that with a concerted effort from government and from health and from education and from housing. In a space of less than a year, we developed a COVID vaccination. And I'd love to see a vaccination for Group A strep, which would eliminate this disease. I'd love to see our First Nations people have improved living conditions like the rest of us, because that's just a basic human right, isn't it? So I think, you know, the future at the moment is uncertain. We have increasing numbers of rheumatic patients. We're slowly seeing some investment from the government, which is encouraging, but there's a long way to go. And every time I turn up to my clinic with a kid with rheumatic heart disease, my heart sinks, because I just know we could do better.
Yeah, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head with that. You know, we can simply do better. You know, you've certainly got my support with what you're trying to do with eradicating it, you know, and putting your own name in the history books of you know, being an integral part of eliminating it within those First Nations people. So, you know, anyone who's listening, if there's a way that you can support this, please reach out. You know, we'd love to throw as much support as we can. And anything else that you'd like to add, Ben, before we wrap up, mate?
No, thanks very much, Sam. It's great talking to you.
No, we very much appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, mate.
If this episode has brought up anything for you, or you need some advice or guidance on your CHD journey, you can call the Heart Kids Helpline on 1-800-432-785. To access more information, as well as find out more about the support Heart Kids offers, visit the website at heartkids.org.au. The information in this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice from your doctor or healthcare team. Always talk to your doctor about matters that affect yours or your family's health.